There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this beautiful Friday. Live local talk coming your way. Phone number, text line 343-0106. You can, even if you're somewhere you got to be quiet, it's fine. You can text us at 343-0106. If not, love to hear your voice as well. Remember, online, fmtalk1065.com. And we're going to get into the Moon Pie Minute here in just a second. But remember, you can go listen to the past episodes of the Moon Pie Minute by going to our website, fmtalk1065.com, and clicking the link for Moon Pie Minute. You can listen to the ones that have already aired. Get yourself ready for all the rest of them from now through Ash Wednesday. Speaking of Mardi Gras, Condi Cavaliers roll tonight at 6:30, the official downtown boom boom season. I know Dolphin Island's done a great job over the last couple weeks with parades, but tonight it hits downtown Mobile. Coming up on the show today, my buddy Jeff Poore is going to join us here shortly because I want to talk about a couple things. Governor Ivey and this impaneled commission to look at lottery and gaming in the state. That's part of our discussion. Also, we'll talk about the president yesterday and the president's by name. Well, this thing, when President Trump, when he was going through his thank you list for the folks that he felt helped him during this impeachment proceeding, he said this. Well, he thanks Abraham Lincoln, and then
a lot of people forget Abe Lincoln. I wish he were here. I'd give him one hell of an introduction. But he was a Republican. Abe Lincoln, honest Abe. Bradley Byrne, Alabama. What a great place. Thank you, Bradley.
Hey, is that as close as we'll get to an endorsement by President Trump in the Senate primary here in Alabama? We'll talk about that with Jeff coming up in just a little bit. And one other thing, I'd love to hear from you at 343-0106. Just if you heard the promo that just ran for this weekend with Gordon Deal, so that show on Sunday. And one of the things they were talking about there is the coronavirus taking away attention from just good old-fashioned flu, right? Good old-fashioned homemade flu, swine or monkey or avian or H1N, whatever. The good old-fashioned flu, back when I was a kid, we used to have good old-fashioned flu. Is the coronavirus, all that attention, distracting from the flu? I think it's a fair question to ask. I think maybe you could turn around and say it's actually bringing more attention to your common run-of-the-mill, constantly mutating flus out there, but maybe not. And I thought, is there an analogy here, and something that I've been harping on for years, that so much energy, so much time is spent with the gnashing of teeth, wringing of hands, and attempted legislation to deal with global warming and the idea that it's anthropogenic, right? That we're behind it. People are behind the global warming. And I lament that if one-tenth of that energy was put to tackling things like water quality, right? So it's an issue for us. It's a big issue. You see what happened along the Mississippi coast this last summer. Look at the red tide situation in Florida. But look at the fact that we get rain around here, sewage overflows, not just Mobile, not just Moss, it's Baldwin County as well, let alone whatever's happening up the river systems to the north of us, that we have the sewage. And we've just kind of become numb to it, that, well, it rains, you know, so therefore sewage is going to overflow. It's this idea that that's okay has it just baffled me over time. And I know most of y'all don't agree with that because we've talked about it before, but there seems to be a bigger idea that it's okay. It's just some sewage in our water. And so if the attention and the bumper stickers and all the rallying around this question of whether global warming is man-made, it's anthropogenic. If all that and legislation and Kyoto and Paris Accords and all these things, if just a piece of that energy was spent in our neck of the woods or anywhere across the United States tackling things that are specific like water quality issues, I think we might be better off environmentally. I mean, something that you could deal with. So looking at the analogy there between... The question was asked there, is coronavirus taking away attention from the flu and what people are going to do about the flu? I don't know. Maybe it brings more attention. But I know in the flip side of the case, the global warming, I think, takes attention away from questions that are localized environmental issues. I mean, what do we want? We want clean water. We want clean air, right, y'all? I think that's something that is bipartisan, should be nonpartisan. But it ends up getting wrapped up in a political debate. All right, just side note as we get started this morning. Also want to say job well done to our buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. and Kennedy for Alabama on tonight, along with Peter Albrecht and Roseanne Haven from News 5. Democrat debate that aired last night, 6 o'clock here at FM Talk 106.5. Good job on the production side there. Sounded great. So well done. And Robert's show, of course, Kennedy for Alabama tonight at 6 o'clock. I'm sure there'll be more discussion on that coming up tonight at 6. All right, we'll come back. Jeff Poor is going to join us. Want to talk with him about, and if you got any questions about what's coming up in this session, we're going to kind of compare and contrast what Governor Ivey said in the State of the State address on Tuesday, right? What preceded the State of the Union. We had our own thing here in Alabama. What Governor Ivey laid out as the things that were important in the State of the State address versus what the members of the legislature are looking at. We talked to State Senator Chris Elliott yesterday. We'll be talking next week. I know Representative Chip Brown and others will be joining us on the show to talk about what they're working on right now up on Goat Hill. Are the agendas set by Governor Ivey? Does she have the bully pulpit strength to set the agenda in the House and in the Senate? That's some of what we'll talk about with Jeff. And also, that shout out to AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne yesterday during the president's about an hour and change, acquittal rally celebration. What does that mean? Is that tacitly an endorsement in the AL1 Republican primary? Talk about that and a whole lot more when we come back. Phone number, text line 343-0106. This is Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
1219 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, Friday style. Glad you're here. Gorgeous day out there today. Dr. Bill says slight chance of rain tomorrow, but slight. More by Monday and Tuesday. But we'll get more from Dr. Bill coming up at around 12:35. Y'all say hello to my buddy Jeff Poor from Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, and of course the Jeff Poor radio show. You hear that in Huntsville or on them internets on WVNN.com. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Sean, guess what? It is snowing in Huntsville.
Is it really? Okay, so I saw a story that Huntsville and Birmingham had a chance or saw some flakes, but right now you're currently on the way to the studio and you're looking at snow.
I'm looking at, like, flakes, but nothing's sticking. It's just, like, bad dandruff or something, I guess.
What are you going to do? If you have to start the Jeff Poor Show, you have no time to go buy bread and bologna and beer. I mean, what are you supposed to do?
The Yankees in North Alabama can handle the snow impact a little bit better than you guys down south, I think.
Well, I think anybody can, actually. But I think if you look, we're the only place we have beat on any kind of, or people from in Florida. That's the only people we have, or Louisiana. The two places we haven't beat on dealing with snow. Other than that, yeah, we're probably the worst at it here. I would agree with that. So would you be safe and let us know on Facebook that you're safe and you're accounted for and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I got my four-wheel drive, and, you know.
You do.
All is well.
You've got my dream Jeep. That's a whole conversation for another day. I do. The couple things I wanted to have been thinking about, hollering at you to talk about, and I'm glad you have a second here. Number one, I would talk about a local issue, and this is something that I heard when Governor Ivey talked on Tuesday night during the State of the State, and I commented some on it on Wednesday and yesterday, but it seems to be getting traction now that Governor Ivey has going to impanel a committee, another committee here, Jeff, but this one to look at lottery and gambling in the state of Alabama. Does it seem odd to you this was not done ahead of time or maybe had already been done? I mean, what's your take?
This is a punt. I don't want to deal with it this year. Obviously, it's you're never going to get everybody happy. I'm convinced of this because if you pass the lottery, or it's a legislature pass the lottery, it goes to a vote of the people, and then you open it, you make gambling legal. It becomes games of chance versus games of skill. And the fear from the dog track lobby is, look, we don't want to have to compete with the Porch Creek. So put us a bunch of protections in a simple lottery bill, because if we get gambling in Alabama, then they get gambling on tribal lands. They always lard it up with a bunch of amendments, and it never makes it through. That's the problem, I think. That, you know, people will tell you otherwise, but the idea that this commission is going to come to a solution and everybody's going to see kumbaya is a farce.
Okay, well, the idea being that there's so many areas that you pointed out, one, where this comes off the rails, but I would say that you've got the issue of, look at last year, you know, where the money goes. Right, the money. So there's the issue of it should go to schools. No, it should go to the general fund. It should go. There's that issue. There's the issue, just like you pointed out, of what's in it for me, legacy dog tracks versus the Porch Bandit Creek Indians. You have the, of course, the nuance there of electronic lotto being the go ahead for these slot machines that will be playing. I'm air quoting here, lotto. But you know, I think if you do this, if you and I just go out and stop people around the state of Alabama, you up in Huntsville, me down here, and ask them what their worries about lotto are, they just want the lotto. I don't think most regular Alabamians really even get into, is it video? Is it money for the ETF? Is it money for the general fund? They just want to play lotto, man.
I agree. We've been talking about this since I've been a kid. I mean, like, how much lottery talk can we have in discussion? I think people are tired of talking about it. But I'm going to tell you the reality is, you're never going to get the needed three-fifths in the legislature to get a constitutional amendment with all these underlying issues. And you know, unfairly, the religious right is castigated by people because they think the reason Alabama doesn't have a lottery is because of those Bible thumpers and snake charmers. That's not the case at all. The real story here is that you could never get all these gambling interests to sit down and agree to something. There's just so much money involved.
But they're not getting any. Well, they're getting some now, but I mean, they're in keeping the other one from having, you know, their slice of pie. They're not going to get one either.
Well, what do the dog track casinos, those interests, have to gain by any of this? And they're very powerful. They have some powerful members of the legislature, Dublin Warren, Bobby Singleton, and the House and Senate, respectively. They could block a lot of this, even though they're on the Democrat side. They can block some of it, and until you can get those guys happy, I think you've got the Porch Creek and pretty much everybody else kind of okay with it, but you're going to have to make those guys happy. Until you can pull that off, you're not going to have a lottery in Alabama.
Okay, you and I have mentioned this before, though. As the Porch Creeks talk about the kind of money they're offering for a compact to the state of Alabama, is there enough money in there for the Porch Creeks just to buy out the legacy dog tracks?
I think that's what you might see if we do go to a compact. So the word on the street is, they will just buy out the interest and make it in Greene County and Birmingham or wherever else they need to, Lowndes County, and or make some kind of bargain with those guys. But in return, they're going to have to give the Porch Creek everything. They're going to have to give them the exclusivity. They're going to have to give them perhaps Birmingham and a location up in, I think, Jackson County, Scottsboro, mm-hmm. near the Tennessee border. That's been part of it. That is how you get there and make everybody happy. I think the best bet is just to buy off the competing interest and figure out how to do that. I don't know if the Porch Creek had that kind of cash.
Hey, y'all, does that make you feel icky hearing what actually goes on when you'll see ads run, and we'll get into that in a second, opposing or supporting these different ideas, but basically it boils down to legacy dog tracks possibly just being bought out and the Poarch Creeks paying to have the monopoly, so to speak. And speaking of which, so the Poarch Bandit Creek Indians has been pushing hard for this compact, and it's been going on for a while. Heck, it was going on during the Bentley years, and it's still here today, probably a lot more polished today, and an ad campaign. But then this opposition group, I heard, wasn't it on Tuesday or Wednesday, there was a, I don't know if it was a press conference or something put out by Gerald Donald that had in this, he admitted that this Poarch Creek Accountability Group, which is the PAC that's formed to oppose the Poarch Creeks, which is a dark PAC, dark money PAC, but he admitted that the majority of the money came from out of state.
Oh, I mean, that would make sense, too, because you don't want to have to compete. So why not throw $10,000, $20,000, or whatever if you're an out-of-state gambling interest and you have people driving to Biloxi, or you have people driving to Cherokee, North Carolina, or wherever to go gamble? It's a business decision. So, I'm not totally shocked. That's how the lottery went down
sure.
in 1999 when Don Siegelman tried. It was the Choctaw Indians of Mississippi that funded Jack Abramoff's effort to block the lottery, so you wouldn't have this discussion about games and chance in Alabama later on.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering when I heard this. I wondered how much of this, if any, was money coming from the Choctaws. And I said, oh, well, we got the Choctaws versus the Creeks on this.
Yeah, well, now this time around, though, the Creeks can play. The Creeks got some money, and the Creeks are the one thing the Creeks have an advantage over any of these outside interests is they're pretty well connected in Montgomery these days.
Yes.
You could like that or not like that. It doesn't matter. That's just the reality of the situation. And if he's going to try to block or do something, you're going to have to deal with that component.
But are those two interests, I mean, because you pointed out the strength of the legacy dog track in Montgomery, but just from where I sit, it seems like the Poarch Bandit Creek Indians has more influence in the legislature now, but you're saying maybe not?
I think the Poarch Bandit Creek Indians have a lot of influence.
That's, but more than more gonna, than the legacy dog tracks?
Yeah, I would say so. The legacy dog tracks interest is mostly along party lines, just given Macon and Greene County. Now they have a few other members around the state that aren't Democrats, but for the most part, the Poarch Creek Indians are really smart the way they played this. They're with the Republican majority. I think they have numbers on the dog tracks just because of the who is in the leadership in the Senate and the House, respectively.
If you're just joining us, talking to Jeff Poor, who's on his way to work at WVNN to do the Jeff Poor Show this afternoon. Of course, you read his work in Land Yap, Yellowhammer News, Breitbart. All right, so let me ask you a couple questions coming in on the text line. Matt says this, Jeff. Question for Jeff Poor. Can the state, House, and Senate gain enough momentum to move forward with a lottery bill without the governor, since she's obviously acting as an obstructionist?
Steve Klaus, the general fund budget chairman, has a bill in the House for a paper lottery. People will talk about paper lottery, all that's old-fashioned. No, that is just your Mega Million, Powerball, scratch-off ticket paper lottery.
That's what they have in Mississippi, right? That's what, yeah. Mississippi, Georgia, okay.
Yeah, because in Mississippi they have gambling. They don't need any electronic lottery, right?
Right.
So that being said, Klaus is a very, very powerful person in that body. He whatever 7% that they're fighting over of the general fund budget, he has discretion over that. He could come to you and tell you, you're not getting this, or mm-hmm. we're taking this away from you. He has an ability to whip votes, I think. I think this effort from him is one to watch, because he is a guy that is a leadership figure, more so than anything we've tried before. Now, Greg Allbritton, granted, when he tried it in the Senate last year, he's in that same spot, just on the Senate side. But what was going on in the Senate at the time, they were just passing everything and not really thinking about later on down the road when it gets to the House. And we know what happened in the House with that lottery bill that Greg Allbritton put out.
All right, coming right back, more with Jeff Poor. At grab your text as well at 343-0106. This is just some of the way the sausage is getting made. And not delicious sausage, the lottery sausage in Montgomery. We'll talk more about this. And also, was that an endorsement yesterday when President Trump mentioned AL1's congressman and candidate for Senate Bradley Byrne by name, thanking him? We'll talk about that with Jeff when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along. Good to have my buddy Jeff Poore talking Montgomery, and we're going to talk to Washington in a second, but I do want to finish up a little bit more of this lottery talk. I mean, so the idea here is, and the question is, can something be done with the governor? Basically, I mean, this study commission puts this on ice, right? I mean, this seriously hamstrings the lotto discussion for this year.
I don't think so. The legislature could do the lottery without the governor.
Sure.
He has no role in the constitutional amendment aspect.
Then what's her benefit? What's her benefit if she knows they're going to go end around on her? What does she gain by this?
She doesn't gain anything. But she would have no say because it would go to a vote of the people. Now, she may have a say when it comes to, you know, setting up the actual law. If it does pass a ballot, then she would have a say. But to get a lottery legal in Alabama, which is going to be the very, very beginning of this, Getting on the ballot in a constitutional amendment, she doesn't play much of a role at all. She's just kind of a figurehead in this.
Yeah, and explain, because we both said this over time, but I want people to understand that what the legislature would do, while they are talking about where money goes and how systems work and all that, that's all the backstory for a constitutional amendment on the ballot, right? I mean, they're not going to do anything in session, y'all. And then all of a sudden there'd be a lottery. We're going to have a vote on it.
Right. It's going to be 1999 all over again with Singleman, right? You're going to have to do all that stuff, and there's going to be a campaign just like there would be anything else. But to get on the ballot, it's got to get 3/5 of the members of the legislature, and that's where you always run into the hiccups, because the dog track folks are worried about what advantage this might give their competitors in the Porch Creek Indian tribal land, and they're always trying to put provisions in it to protect those, and the legislature just, you know, isn't really willing to do that, and it never gets that 3/5 threshold, because that's not a simple majority. You got to get the numbers.
Yeah, because we're talking about constitutional amendment here, and then of course the whole other wrinkle is, does this compact that's offered here change everything, or maybe change nothing? I don't know. I don't know how desperate, you know, if this compact comes up the way they're offering the money now, when the state was destitute, it's one thing. I hate to sound, you know, mercenary here, but with the talk of how the revenues are looking good in Montgomery, it may make it to where they could say, nah, we're not going to do that.
See, the Porch Creekers are smart. They would recognize this, and they would wait until there was a hole in the Medicaid budget or something like that, and be like, hey, let's make a deal with us. We'll fill that gap.
But you
always have these situations where like a BP oil spill happens or something, and you get a bunch of money, and the state gets bailed out. Well, they can wait their turn to bail the state out.
Oh, yeah. The state of Alabama, we're famous for, you know, being broke, but reaching in our coat pocket and finding that $20 bill we forgot we put in there. So, I mean, that's...
Right. If I were the Porch Creek Indians, and I don't know what their rush is on this, they seem to be doing all right the way things are going now. Wait until the state needs the money and then start running your $1 billion of commercials, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what I think. But nobody consulted with us. All right, let's shift gears to President Trump yesterday and his, I don't know, you call that a speech or a rally event or just a gathering of folks, but it was based on a little bit of a thank you for the folks that President Trump said helped him through this impeachment process and leading to the acquittal. And about an hour of the president talking.
Yeah, he'd been storing this one. He had this one chambered for a while, right?
Yeah.
And even left, it's fury, but I think he's just reflecting like what people, a lot of his supporters, his diehard supporters, kind of feel about what had happened. And here it is. What did the left think that Trump was going to do? Did they think he would give a Bill Clinton type speech? The problem with this is Bill Clinton knew he did something wrong. Trump still does not think he did anything wrong. Why would he be contrite?
Right. Well, I wouldn't expect him to be contrite at any point. But, he, you know, he was. It seems like he was at least lauding and rewarding those people he felt were key to the fight, right?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, he named up, rattled off a few names of members of Congress, the Matt Gaetz, Steve Scalise, and others, but Jim Jordan. But and a shout-out to Alabama 1st Congressional District's Bradley Byrne as well.
So what do you think? You heard that. I mean, I'm listening to it yesterday in here before we got started with the show, and I heard that, and I went, well, now that's not any kind of – there's no official endorsement. He hasn't endorsed a candidate in a primary, but he's not lost on the president or anybody in the White House how – you know, we're 3 weeks and change out from the primary – in a contested, Republican primary, and he names one person as being he didn't name anybody else. He didn't say thank you to anybody else. He said thank you to Bradley Byrne.
Well, let's hope the Bradley Byrne campaign is cutting the commercial right now.
Yeah,
with Donald Trump giving him the shout out, and if they were smart about it. But I assume they are. No,
I wouldn't doubt.
But they need to be up on the air with that tomorrow, right? But. I wouldn't read too much into it. My understanding is Trump's still staying out. He's not going to endorse a candidate. But the one thing I would not be surprised to see is if he came after Sessions. He still doesn't like Jeff Sessions. It's no secret about it. And Jeff Sessions is really trying to do ad out today, really, really trying hard to get back on Trump's good side, but I just don't know that there's much interest there.
Yeah, and that new ad, I have not watched it, but I saw you and others on Twitter commenting that it, or somebody commented that it was like a ad actually for President Trump that just happened to be brought to you by Jeff Sessions.
Yeah, it was a little bit of Sessions, but mostly about how great Donald Trump was. That was Brian Lyman's takeaway from it, but I don't give Brian Lyman too much credence when it comes to these things. He doesn't really understand it. I don't know if Trump is the magic ticket here to getting the nod, but for a guy like that, he kind of sees it as silly and dumb, and we need to be talking about global warming or something.
Okay, yeah, true, good point. But I think, look at it, the last 3.5 weeks here, somebody has got to go on the, you and I talked about it, some of the personnel changes in the Tuberville campaign, this has got to go pretty rough pretty fast if somebody wants to make sure they're the other person in the runoff, or if they want to make sure, if you're Sessions people, that there's not a runoff.
There's no way Jeff Sessions is going to avoid a runoff. That polling data he put out, it's way too contingent on a big turnout number. I think they got like a million plus turning out when they need the turnout's not going to hit a million people, I think. But the bigger the turnout, it benefits Jeff Sessions. The smaller the turnout, I think it benefits Tuberville, somewhere in between, probably Congressman Byrne. But Jeff Sessions, these guys will have to go after each other, but watch what their PACs do. I think they're just kind of waiting to see who goes first. It's in that kind of situation where you have the guns pointed at each other, and it's a three-way fight, and who's going to go first.
But do you think those
trigger first?
And I see what you're saying. Like a standoff here. Everybody's got their missiles raised, but are they going to fire at Sessions? I mean, if you're Byrne in Tuberville's camps, are you firing at Sessions to try to bring him down, or are you going to try to take out the other one to make sure you're in the person in the runoff?
There's an emotional component here. Everybody seems to want to go after Jeff Sessions. That he seems like the easy target. I think for the Byrne campaign, it would behoove them to go after Coach Tuberville. But there's that emotional component that he got in this race late, and he really ruined a lot of people's campaign chances for this. And I think that's driving some of the decision-making right now.
Yeah, of course, a lot of us wonder, this is the old wonder thing. If if Jeff Sessions would not have announced and gotten in, who would be leading? I think it'd be Byrne and Tupperville at the top, but who out of the two would be leading? In other words, the people that are now lined up behind Sessions, who would they line up behind in a scenario without Sessions?
Well, here's something I want you to do. I think it's really, really interesting, Sean, that the Byrne campaign's starting to put money into the Mobile, Pensacola market.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to look at Baldwin and Mobile counties. And my opinion's always been this. I think Bradley Byrne's going to do well in certain places in the state that aren't Mobile or Baldwin County. I think he's going to do really well down there. And he needs to turn out the vote. He needs to run the score up down there. And I wouldn't be surprised if you started seeing more Bradley Byrne activity down your way. Because as of now, that Senate race, no one's really paid much attention to that market. And I've always thought that was a mistake. Everybody thinks the crown jewel is Birmingham. But I'm not convinced you're going to have a really big turnout in Birmingham. But I think you're going to have a big turnout in Mobile because you have two hometown guys,
mm-hmm.
a congressional race going on, and a lot of different components that are going to drive that turnout up. So you don't need to just think you've got Mobile because you're the hometown guy.
Because there's two of you that are the hometown guy.
Well, yeah. If you consider Jeff Sessions in 2020 to be the hometown guy still. But, yeah, you got two hometown guys. Maybe that takes away some of the Byrne vote, and that's an additional incentive for him to get serious about being down there and spending more time down there. But I've always thought, even before Sessions, it was Bradley by a mile down there. But the unforeseen circumstances of somebody like Jeff Sessions getting in have really hurt his numbers there.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Dems. We could maybe even react to James Carville, his take on November 2020. Coming off of maybe New Hampshire's going to be different, but coming off of what we saw in Iowa, do you think, are you looking at the person that can beat President Trump? I mean, I don't think I've seen it yet.
I don't think the person that can beat Trump's on that state. I don't even think it's Michael Bloomberg, really, to be honest. Bloomberg will spend money. And he's bought up all the TV time between now and the election. And if he doesn't get the nomination, he says he's going to help the Democrat do it because he just wants Trump out of office. But I got to tell you, I'm not convinced that things are in a spot where Democrats can win right now. It's the Electoral College is their enemy. They may have the numbers. They may can win in the big cities. They're not going to win some of these swing states. I think it's marginal at best, their chances in the states they lost. I also think they got a shot at losing Minnesota or New Mexico or somewhere like that. It could even make it a bigger win, Electoral College win for Trump, and still maybe pick up the popular vote.
Now, people are talking about the Republicans taking the House back too, but that sounds like a lot of rah-rah talk to me. What do you think?
Well, they're at a fundraising disadvantage. There's no question about it. The DCCC is outraising the NRCC. They're going to have to figure that out. But that's just the reality of being not being the party in power. The money goes to the party in power. But I will say, Trump has coattails.
Mm-hmm.
How much can Trump keep it together? Can the Democrats be terrible? If you nominate a Bernie Sanders, Sean, I think you wind up with like a George McGovern 2.0 scenario.
Whoa.
And if that's the case, then, yeah, I think the House is certainly in play.
So, I mean, there's members of the House that they're, you know, Democrat members of the House, that their fates ride on who the nominee is for the Democrats.
Yeah, because people will come out and they'll vote for Trump even more. And, you know, he may or may not have coattails, but in a lot of places, there's a lot of straight tickets. That makes it hard for somebody like Doug Jones, even with all his money, to win another term in Alabama. Because Trump's going to have coattails. And those coattails, we haven't seen it yet. But people did expect the Republicans to keep the Senate in 2016. And by virtue of Trump being on the ballot, guys like Roy Blunt and others were able to win their Senate seats. And they kept the majority in the Senate. I mean, with Trump on the ballot, they had the House, the Senate, and the White House. And, you know, no one expected that. Everybody expected the opposite. They expected to lose ground in Congress. I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happened again. And, so, and additionally, real quick, 2018, Donald Trump wasn't on the ballot, but he campaigned a lot for those guys in the Senate. If Donald Trump was so bad, Republicans should have lost the Senate. It should have been a wipeout. They gained seats. Josh Hawley in Missouri and Rick Scott in Florida pickups for the Republicans. So it's not a bunch of rah-rah talk. Things could go the way that the Republicans could get the House, but I mean, I wouldn't say it's a sure thing either.
There he is, Jeff Poor from, of course, Jeff Poor Show. He's heading there right now, but read his work locally in Lanyap, also Breitbart, Yellowhammer News. Have a great weekend, man. We'll check back with you very soon.
All right, thanks for having me on, Sean.
It's always a pleasure and an education when you listen to Jeff's take on things. 12:50, coming right back. More of Midday Mobile. This is FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:54, FM Talk 106.5. And it is Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. Phone number 343-0106. Let's go to Derek in Daphne. Hey, Derek.
How you doing?
Doing good, man. What you talking about today? You said you want to talk about Bernie?
Yeah, I'm just curious on if they are really pushing for Bernie to not get this nomination for the Democratic Party simply because he's a socialist. Why are they allowing him to run under their name? I mean, they stopped him last time with, Hillary. They don't want him now because they're going to be pushing, with Buttigieg and Bloomberg. And I'm just curious on why do they allow not only him but Warren and the squad to all fall under that Democratic label? Is it just to receive more votes?
They qualified. So there's a qualifying process, right? So a certain number of supporters, signatures, those kind of things. And so they qualified. So they are candidates. And they are all, when you talk about Warren and you talk about Sanders, you talk about Klobuchar, those are all duly elected Democratic senators from their states. So there would be no way if they meet the minimum standards to keep them out. You know, the Democrat Party can't keep somebody out who gets qualified and they're a Democrat.
Okay.
But they're trying the backwards thing.
Staying in?
Do what?
Do you believe that that's the only reason why they're staying in is because they've been qualified, even though they're, socialist?
No, but they represent, I think they represent, look at the percentages they're getting. I mean, Buttigieg is in a tie with Sanders, and that's Iowa, right? I mean, Derek, think about that. Iowa's not New York. Iowa Democrat, but they're coming out for Sanders to almost a tie ball game, right, with Buttigieg. So there's a lot of the party maybe that wants those kind of candidates. And you look at the squad, you could say, well, the squad just represents their areas. They're real liberal. But look at the strength they've gotten. Look at the amount of leverage they have, even over Pelosi.
So I guess that's where the Democratic Party is heading.
I think so. I think so. And you wonder if there's going to be, and you bring up a good point. Will there be some sort of split, rift, defection in there from maybe more moderate Democrats to say, hey, we're going to push these people out, or we're going to go find our own thing? Being a two-party system, it's hard. If we had a multi-party system, I bet you would already have seen some kind of version of that.
Right.
But where do they go?
I think that because it's headed so far left, I think over time, within the next decade, you're not going to see much of a Democratic Party anymore.
What do you think it'll be? What do you think it'll look like?
It's just extremely far left, more socialist.
Then where do the moderates go?
The Democratic Party is getting just pushed out.
But where do they go when they get pushed out? Do they start another party? Do they? I mean, because
trying to basically take over that Democratic label. Even though they are socialists, I think they're just trying to stay up under that in order to have that Republican side, Democratic side. But I still think that they're just going so far left with all their issues that you could see it. I mean, you see Pelosi, kind of bowing down to the squad and everything.
Yep.
And they're just implementing their beliefs and everything else and just really pushing that old, Democratic thought out.
Well said. Well said, Derek. Yeah, I appreciate your call. Thank you. Talked a little bit about that this morning. listening to the AL1 Democrat debate last night here at FM Talk 106.5. It was hosted by Robert Kennedy Jr., moderated by Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama tonight at 6, and Peter Albrecht. And when the Second Amendment question came up, I thought it was very interesting. Interesting tell, and we'll talk about that when we get back.